No.
Yeah, that's definitely you. It wasn't doing that until you joined. So, we're live now, and it's been a while since we've done this, and Jason was coming in late, and I was a little worried he wasn't going to be able to join us. Les isn't here. I don't even know where he is. I haven't seen him in like 3 weeks, so I hope he's still doing okay. But as always, whenever I need somebody to come in from the bullpen, Scott Merchant was able to step in. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
What's happening, bud?
So, Jason was causing an echoing sound, so I'm glad that he has muted himself. So, only talk whenever you're allowed to talk. So, Jason, I'm going to allow you to come back and talk. Jason, what's up?
It's still echoing for me, but I am doing well.
Okay, good. I am pumped for today's guest, and I'm pumped for a couple of reasons. One, because we haven't done this in a few weeks, because I was traveling, but I'm back now. We're back for a few months, and I know this guest personally. I've had a chance to see him and meet him time and time again. We've had lunch together. Actually, the last time we had lunch together, we booked and confirmed this, and that might have been 12 months ago. But the guy that's with us today, he's got a lot of stories to tell. We've only got a half an hour, but I'm going to let him take a couple of minutes to introduce himself. And Think Golf is the focus of today's call. We could talk about a lot of things that he's involved with. You see the logo there behind him. I've used the app several times, and I'm really excited to learn more about it. But we have Tim Souza with us from Think. Tim, welcome to the Friday Foursome.
Thanks, Ricky. Thanks for having me on. This is great. This is my first Google Hangout, believe it or not.
Is it really? No kidding. Yeah. I didn't realize that.
Well, we're webinars with Think, but we don't see people's pretty faces, so this is good.
Well, I'd be glad Lisa didn't hear that, because you don't want to see his pretty face. So, tell me, give me the elevator pitch. What is Think? How do I use it? What is it? And what is your role with the app?
Yeah, well, my role with the company is I'm founder and CEO of the company, and I started it with Dr. Debbie Cruz. And I think I've been teaching golf. I'm a PGA golf professional. I've been a PGA golf professional for 20 years. In fact, they just sent me a card in the mail that said I've been a PGA golf professional for 20 years. This is what you get after 20 years.
Congratulations.
So I've always been on the instruction side of it, but I saw some voids in the mental game. And working with Dr. Debbie Cruz, so this whole company actually evolved from a simple golf lesson. I was working with a student on the Canadian tour, and I was taking him through some focus drills on the range. And it was just a simple drill that we do. They're called 180s. We try to get a player more, I won't get into all the science behind it, but we try to get a player a little bit more external, focused on the target. And I was doing this with him. He turned around and he goes, this is fun. I like this drill. It's like a video game. And I had the kind of the aha moment. I'm like, why couldn't you train a skill with a video game? And so I took this idea to Dr. Debbie Cruz, and Debbie's background, she's really kind of a hardcore research scientist, LPGA master professional, but she actually hooks up golfers' brains to devices like EEGs. This is an EEG technology, so it has sensors on it, and we can actually measure the brain waves. And so I like the fact that she had science behind the brain, because I come from more of an objective world I like to measure. So she kind of laughed, and she's like, this is kind of interesting. We're building video games right now for surgeons to prepare them for surgery. And I said, okay. I said, if we can prepare a surgeon to hit a, for surgery, we can sure as heck teach Ricky how to hit a golf ball, right? So,
well, I don't know.
And then there's a company that I saw called Lumosity. This goes back a ways, but Lumosity is an online brain game training, cognitive training company. And so that's how the company started, really. I took an idea, and like a lot of us have ideas, and I was like, there seemed to be a void, I thought, for a lot of mental game tools. So Debbie and I put our heads together, and we started with building some video games. We built some video games, and then we added a couple other tools to what I would call our mental game toolbox. And here we are. So we launched in April of 2014 our website. And it's an online subscription-based website. And we work on certain skills that we can talk about. The skills that we felt were the most, and I'd like, I kind of want to learn a little bit about, could I ask you guys questions? How do you currently work on your mental game? What percentage of the game do you think is mental? And most people, when you ask them what percentage of the game is mental, they go, they'll say like 90%. Then you ask them what percentage of the time they spend working on it, you kind of get the deer in the headlights look like, work on it. How do I work on my mental game? So we built this platform, and the skills we work on are attention, intention. Well, awareness was the first game, and then intention, attention, synchronicity, and adaptability. And so that's five games, and the Q is actually a score. So you play the games and you get a score of 0 to 100, and then you establish a Q handicap. So the lower the handicap, just like a USGA handicap, the lower, the better the mental game.
That answered my first question, was going to be where did the Q come from, so that is awesome. Like, it's cool to hear the history behind it and to realize that there's so much of the research piece of it. Like, that's really cool to hear. And, you know, to answer your question, I feel like I play better when my mental capacity is better, when I slow down and I think about it. And I've been actually doing a lot of on-course breathing techniques that I've been I've kind of developed them on my own, but they've helped me. And, you know, to answer the question, how much do I think of it's mental, I mean, I can hit a terrible shot, but still mentally the way I approach that will affect the score on that hole. Well, I don't practice it per se, but, you know, I guess when using think, I don't think that that's me practicing my mental side of it, I guess. So I think that that's one of the coolest things about the app, is that it doesn't make me feel like I'm working on my mental game when I really am. And, you know, that's it's hidden within the video game aspect. I use it because, oh, it's a video game, and I'm on my phone, and you know, that's the capacity that I approach the app from.
Sure. Yeah. So the transfer is a question we get a lot. It's like, how does this transfer to performance? And if you look at, it's interesting with golf, it takes 4 to 4.5 hours, but you really only have to be up for a shot for 20 to 30 seconds. So let's just say 30 seconds. So 30 seconds, the average golfer shoots 90. So what does that equate to? You're really playing golf for about 27, 30 minutes, you know, where you really have to perform. And shot routines really don't take 30 seconds, but the first thing that you do on the golf course is, awareness is the first key to performance. So we have to be aware of our environment, we have to be aware, and a lot of people aren't. I learned this when I was doing playing lessons. So my background, again, is more on the physical game, teaching, biomechanics, you know, club fitting, launch monitors, fitness, that world I live in, doing biofeedback with technologies. Like I K-Vest, a sensor to do biofeedback to learn a motor skill. So if you look up cognitive training Wikipedia, you know, it's always good to see the definition. It's interesting. It just says fitness training for the brain. So we had to come up with, you know, if you look at going kind of rewind to the shot routine that you're in, so you have this awareness on the golf course, and you've got to be aware of flies and conditions and turf and your hazards and wind and the higher the level you get as a tour player, there's even more things like humidity and grasses. And so you have this awareness, and that's the first key. So after you create an awareness, and a lot of people just aren't aware. When I do playing lessons, it's amazing what they're thinking about. And I think if elite level golfers, they have a different mentality when they go about the game. But when you talk to amateurs, it's like, really? That's they don't even notice like a hazard or bunker or strategy. So create an awareness. Then the first thing you do after you, and we have a video game for that we can practice awareness. So it's just repetition. So if you wanted to improve the skill of memory, could you do that through repetition? Absolutely. So, you know, if you went to the gym 5 days, I know you do this, Ricky, right? You go to the gym 5, 6, 7 days a week. So if you go to the gym 5 days a week, you know, 52 weeks out of the year, your body's going to adapt. If you have a healthy diet, same principle. Well, what if you did 10 or 15 minutes of training on a cognitive skill through repetition? It's called, I'm not going to get into all the neuroscience aspect of it, but it's called neuroplasticity, and it's actually the brain's ability for neurons to connect and fire new connections. So after we create an awareness, then it's like we have to have an intention. What do we want? We got to ask for what it is we want. And this is what I want the golf ball to do. And you really, once you do the intention, you're setting your whole golf swing up for performance. And then our third game is attention. And attention is where, that's the hard one. People, you would want to learn attention, you need distraction. So in our games, you play the attention game where the ball is rolling. It's like we're trying to pull you out, but it's an endurance. And people feel fatigued when they play our games. They're like, a lot of video games are fun and everything, but this doesn't actually work. I mean, you play the games for 15 minutes and you can sense it. And then the fourth game is synchronicity, and synchronicity is to try to balance the right and left side of the brain. It's more of a timing tempo game. And then what do you do after you hit a poor shot? You have to adapt. There's an adaptability phase, and that is the emotions. Again, sometimes I can go down the rabbit hole on the brain talking about how we actually learn. But your post-shot routine is as important as your shot routine. What do we do? Do we anchor the good shot? What do? We dismiss the bad. So I don't want to get long-winded with that whole process, but, I mean, those are where the five skills, and those five skills we put into games. We also put into an online mental game workbook. So you can go through different chapters of the workbook and complete those and share those with your coach. It's definitely, like you said, the half hour flies by, so I want to open up any questions that I can answer because I don't want to get long-winded with.
Well, I honestly sit here and listen to you. You talk about that for half an hour, but I know Scott's got a lot of good questions, so Scott, I'll let you lead the meeting.
Yeah, so mine was, I guess, progress-based. So what do you see as a student goes from rank amateur, where they're chasing butterflies and thinking about a million different things, and you start to dial them in, you know, does golf go up that ladder with them in terms of difficulty and, you know, kind of going to a college level, graduate level, tour pro level? Like, tell me about that kind of progression as it goes up.
Yeah, so what we do with, I don't know how well this is going to show up, but just for kind of our viewers or whatnot. So, I got to hold that kind of high. So on the app, I'll answer it without showing the games. People can download the app. Actually, you can download it for free. But this, you get a baseline. We have to start with a baseline. So there's 5 games, and there's 18 holes to each game. So you play, after you play 9 holes of each game, or 5 holes of each game, you establish a Q handicap. And then 9 holes qualifies you to get on a leaderboard. So after you establish your Q handicap, and that's going to be in a scale from 0 to 36, and obviously it can go plus as well, we recommend your daily training. So it addresses for Scott, you go and play and you have a scoring system, and let's say I go to statistics, it's going to give you something like this that's going to show you where you're strong and weak at in your game and what games you should play, and then it recommends a daily training. So it might say today for my daily training that I have to go in and play those. And we're talking about 10 minutes a day. I mean, we hope that people would play longer because, you know, but it's 10, 12, 15 minutes usually gets you. And then we have competitions and stuff. You can play an 18-hole tournament and see where you compare to golfers around the world. I don't know how well that shows up there, guys.
Really cool.
It's fun because we have prizes. Like first prize we did like with Troon. They had a Troon foursome card. Was first prize, and we'd have like a tailor-made driver, ping driver, but it's cool when you play the games, and when you have an 18-hole tournament, you're actually competing like you would in any golf tournament. I don't care if it's a member guest or a ladies member guest or whatnot. It's like, start getting the butterflies, like, wow, this really counts because I'm playing for something. So, and then there's an address weakness as well, which I think is because it's personalized, but we have to get your baseline. And then we want you to improve, and that's just, this is one of the tools. This is the repetition tool. And versus, one of the challenges I have, and I know a lot of sports psychologists are friends, I have them on our webinars, and I love, but the verbal communication is the worst way for any of us to learn. You know, I can't tell Ricky how to swing a golf club right now. I mean, I would have to, he would have to feel it, he'd have to visualize it, the kinesthetic awareness, the auditory is the worst way. So that was the only thing. I would walk, I was out on the PGA Tour, I was out there for 4 years, and I'd walk fairways, and the sports psychologist would work with my players, and I would look at the interaction between the player and the coach, and it seemed like it was so short-term. It didn't seem like they were developing any long-term sustainability for them to perform. And I'm not saying our games is the only tools by any means, but they really need to learn that skill. And the cool thing is elite level golfers, they climb the leaderboards in these games. I mean, they're at the top. They're at the cream raises to the top. So that's all, you know, again, I hope that answered your question, but we try to personalize as much as we can because every brain's different, every golf swing's different.
This is so cool. Like, I just don't want to use the app. Jason, I know you need to be using this app because, you know, I'm not saying that you're not as good as others. Jason, you guys can get the question.
So for me, it's not necessarily me myself. I come from a competitive background in collegiate bowling and things like that. So I understand how important having a good mental game and being able to recover from a bad shot really is. My 9-year-old, well, 10-year-old now, on the other hand, is a little bit of a different story. And you know, he's got a fantastic physical game and creative on the greens, and he's got all of the attributes that, you know, that you look for in a kid. But his mental game kind of holds him back right now. So for me, it's more how can I help him, or, you know, from a junior golf point of view, and that's kind of my strong, how do I help a child that struggles with you know, making a bad shot and moving on, or having a bad score, or losing a hole? You know, how do you do these games kind of help in that? Is, I guess, what my question is.
Yeah, you know, childhood development with the brain is a little bit different. We don't actually develop our your brain's broken into three sections. You kind of have your thinking neocortex, your conscious mind. And that is what we're talking to each other with. We're listening to that. Then you have this mid-size of brains, your midbrain or your limbic brain. It's where your emotional center. The oldest part of your brain is the cerebellum. So why I bring that up is your brain doesn't fully develop into your thinking neocortex till you're about 19, 20, 21 years old. So these kids are still in their creative phase. They want to create. They're very a little bit more right brain. So the best athletes in the world, they perform when they kind of quiet down there. You were a collegiate bowler?
Mm-hmm.
So what's happening if we hooked you up?
They actually have that, by the way. A lot of people ask me that. They really have that?
At first, I didn't. I don't know you well enough. I didn't know if you were kidding, Jason. I was like,
no, I get it all the time. Trust me.
So, you know, when you hook an athlete up to an EEG technology like this and you look at a brain map, what the research shows is the left side of the brain quiets down. So you go from beta to alpha to theta to delta gamma. You don't play your best when you're in high beta and you're analytical. So think about when you hit a golf shot, you're thinking. You don't play very well. You play when your left side of your brain quiets down a little bit and you go to the right side and you're in alpha. We're trying to get our games to get your brain in a synchronous state through repetition. So back to the junior question, the post-shot routine, I think, for juniors, they get over it quicker than we think. You know, they're ready, they're competitive, they're creating every shot. Now the emotional center of the brain, there might be a little bit more, you know, I actually don't have kids, but I've worked with enough juniors and I've seen the interaction with the parents. And there actually has to be an education with the parents as well on how to react to the junior, because they feed more.
Totally agree with that. That is a very accurate statement.
Yeah, they feed more off of that. That's why a lot of I had kids like when I was working with Arizona State men's and women's golf team. There were certain players, I won't say their names, that didn't want their parents at the tournament, and it was like behavior that they had when I'm not suggesting this, but the behavior that they had when their parents weren't there was completely different when they were. So sometimes the environment, do we let the environment control us or do we control the environment? So I think we have kids that play our games at the age of five, you know, 4 or 5 years old that play them, and they're training their brain, they're exercising the brain. I mean, the brain's it's pretty fascinating to learn about the brain. The brain has a billion bits of information on it. We're only aware of 2,000 at any given time. So most of this training is to train from thinking to doing to being. So I'm trying to change someone's being, if you will, by doing repetition in the brain. So almost like our computers, you know, if we're trying to run new software on an old computer, it doesn't run. So that's why, fitness training, cognitive training for the brain is just repetition, and that's what's called neuroplasticity. And it's fascinating because, you know, I'm 25 years old. I'm just kidding. 25 years ago.
Me too.
Yes, 25 years ago, they thought the brain was hardwired. They thought that you know, genomics or your genetic code, that was it, and you were wired a certain way and you had a certain IQ and that was it. This isn't that long ago. They're going, wait a minute. The brain can grow new nerve growth and neurons and it can adapt and it can change and you can improve. And that's kind of the education we're trying to share through this portal. And that's why the games are one tool, but, you know, like I said, we do webinars. We have an online mental game workbook that people can go through. We even with goal setting, vision board and journal, just some tools. So a lot of people are like, they jump in to think, they're like, oh, I didn't know that you had all this stuff in there. We thought it was a video game. So that's this is to share a little bit of information on the back end.
So we're going to transfer back into the app. And greenskeeper.org sponsors the Friday Foursome, and they sent a ton of good questions. And we're not going to get to all of them, but the next two are going to be from their members. And one member wanted to know, and he started by saying, looks like a great program, can't wait to try it. And then he said, what are the main differences between the free version and the premium version, besides the price? And then he put LOL. So that's a good question, though, because you said you can download the app for free, but you talked about the model. So what's the difference between the free version and the premium version?
The free version actually is if you go into the app and you click on freestyle, and let's say you want to play the awareness game, I actually hit the button twice there. Let me go back. There's nine holes free of each game. So there's quite a bit. So you can play the nine holes free of each game. That will get you a leaderboard. That will also get you a Q handicap. So there's actually quite a bit. And you'll get your daily training. If you want to go beyond that, and that just gets you access to the game. The paid version gets you access to the monthly webinars, the online mental game workbook, the vision board, the journal, and the ability to ask questions. We have a feed on our website that you can ask questions to our think team and we'll answer them. And a lot of people aren't aware of that as well. So we're building a kind of Q&A type portal.
That's really cool. I like that model. And Johnny GK, who is one of the most active members of the Greenskeeper.org community, he said, does caffeine help or interfere? And I asked that, and I'm really, there's a ton more that I could have asked, but I like that one because just recently I've been doing a lot of research that drinking caffeine about an hour before you go work out can actually help produce a more intense and a better workout. So I'm curious the answer to that. Does caffeine help or hinder your use of the app, or do you know?
Dr. Debbie Cruz did some research on this, and there's been some research done, and I'm not a research scientist, but I'll share information. Trying to feel the same on the golf course is the key. Like with PGA Tour players are trying to feel the same 7 days a week or 6 days a week. If you always do caffeine, you better stay on it. Tom Lehman used to drink Diet Cokes like we would drink water. And when he got off of them, it was like, so you got to be careful of getting people off of that vice. So if you, the players I work with would always do like a half a cup or a cup of coffee, but everybody reacts different to those things. Do they have the jitters? How do they feel in the morning? And they have an afternoon round. So I would just say don't, if you're, let's say you're coming into a member guest and you're like, okay, I'm going to cut out caffeine, that wouldn't be a good time to do it. You're either consistently on it or you're off of it. There is more research behind it, and but I wouldn't be the one to answer that question on exactly all the effects.
Scott, nice to you.
What's that saying? I picked the wrong hand, sniffing glue.
Oh, boy. mine was more, I guess if you're saying on the course, what one tip do you see in maybe like a 10 handicap or like a 3 handicap when you say, hey, listen, I know you're not a professional player and you're playing once, maybe twice a week. What is that one thing that you want them to do or stop doing that you think will help them with their mental game?
And in this, the one thing that I think would help everybody across the board, but if we're talking about a single-digit handicap that's trying to take their game to the next level, it's that post-shot routine. And in between shots, every player is a little bit different, but again, you only have to be up for those 20 or 30 seconds. And a lot of people don't realize that. So that's downtime for you. That's time for you to enjoy being outside and enjoy in trying to listen to different sounds. And if it's an airplane flying overhead or the breeze through the trees or leaves rustling, or if you're in Chicago, it's got snow. But that's a time to be down. You only have to be up. But the post-shot routine, people go from they hit a poor shot and they get into a mood. They turn like they hit a bad, they have a bad hole number one, then bad number two, bad number three, all of a sudden. That defined my whole game. But the post-shot routine is to, after you hit a poor shot, what do you do with that? So you meet it head on and go, okay, I did that, but you go back through your shot routine. I see the best players in the world are so, they're so good at post-shot routines, it's amazing. And a lot of people don't pick up on it on TV. If you watch Jim Furyk in the U.S. Open in San Francisco, he was out at the last hole. He hit it in the bunker. He gets there and he hits a shot. Here he's out of it. And what do? Post-shot routine. He's like, this is what I meant to do. And he anchored that and he moved on. And most players, they react poorly. And the brain doesn't know the difference. The brain's like, oh, you like that one. Because remember, the brain's electrical and chemical. So the chemicals go, we're going to have a little party here because you just celebrated a bad shot. And the subconscious mind doesn't know the difference. So one, the language that I hear tour players using when they come off the golf course is different than amateurs. When I was on tour, I was even surprised because I'd be like a player's championship and I'd walk 18 holes with my player and they'd come off and I would see certain things. So I'm the observer, right? well, their skill of observation is going to trump mine, but I'm the observer and I'm going, I saw this. They come off, they're like, Mike, how'd you hit it? I saw them hit their irons really bad. They don't recall that. They're like, they're almost, not that they're not responsible for their actions, but they always talk about the positive things that they did. And it's fascinating. It's like, wow, very positive energy towards anchoring good shots. That's the thing I think differentiates. And I kind of went from 10 handicap to tour player, but that's where they're trying to get to. They're trying to get to a zero handicap.
See, Tiger does that. Tiger can shoot 85 and have nothing but positive things to say about his round. And, you know, that's something that I've always noticed about him. I mean, even when he plays well, obviously he's got good things to talk about. But even when he plays bad, he's...
Jack won't admit that he ever shot over 80. It's like, I never shot over 80. It's like, well, here it is on the scorecard in this tournament. No, it wasn't me.
For an amateur player, I don't think the lexicon post shot routine is even registered. This is the first I've ever heard of it or thought of it. And I just think of my own play. I'm like, my post shot routine is maybe going and checking my phone and having a drink of beer. Like, I, you know, that's not really, I think, the post shot routine. I guess you're like saying, you know, you want to anchor those good shots and build on the positive to get the momentum in through the round or whatever. So, very interesting.
Well, an example of a post-shot routine would be grabbing your golf club and you kind of know what you wanted to do, and you're like, you had a feeling, you kind of know what you did. Go ahead and make like a swing afterwards. It's hard to do. I mean, it's like, okay, all right, that's what I meant to do. That felt good. I'm going to move on. And then you go back to your shot routine, and now you're aware, and you get to, like Ricky said, breathing was important to you. We don't want to be calm on the golf course. That's a big misconception. Athletes are not calm. You can't tell me Tiger's calm after he hits a bad shot.
Ever.
It's about channeling your intensity into what it is you want to do. That intention can be, when I've competed, I haven't competed at a high level, but I remember competing in the World Putting Championship. I wasn't calm. I was breathing and aware, but I mean, my intensity, my brain was, there was neurons firing and heart rate elevating. I don't know if you remember back when they were measuring the heart rate on tour players on those heart rates are 120, 130. That's not calm.
No, that's not calm. Jason, try to stay calm, though, because you've got 3 minutes before we're finished, and we have the back nine, so you get one more question. Scott, you're out of questions, so sorry.
Sorry, I'm going to go have my post-shot routine and have a couple of beers.
You know? Jason, final question.
So a lot of focus on the post-shot routine. How about the pre-shot routine?
Yeah, the pre-shot routine obviously sets everything up. Intention, call it the power of intention, it's kind of asking for what it is that you want. That's really important. A lot of people say having the same amount of seconds shot routine, like it's got to be 15 seconds or it's got to be 12 seconds. That does vary. Jack Nicklaus said he went when he was ready, because I went when I was ready. So try to have something relatively consistent. A lot of people don't practice a shot routine, but have something relatively consistent. If you're going to take a practice swing, stick with it. If you're going to take two practice swings, stick with it. If you're not going to take a practice swing, the research shows with Dr. Cruz that a lot of times the shorter the shot routine, the better. It's not for everybody, but usually when you commit to, let's say you're aware of what it is you want to do, and you're like, okay, I'm going to hit a 6-iron, I know there's trouble over here, and it's okay to think about trouble. It's your last intention. So people are like, if you think about the water, your ball's going to go in the water. Everybody kind of has probably experienced that. So I'm 175 yards. I got a 6-iron. I see water right, and I got bunker left, and I see there's a. If I want to land it on the front of the green, and if I'm short, I'm fine. I start narrowing my intention of where I want that ball to land. Now, as soon as you set that intention, you walk into it, you're set up for your shot. From there, it's attention. Now, we have self-chatter, right? Brain goes, oh, wait a minute, self-doubt. If you have that, you better walk back into it again. But if you keep your intention and you keep your attention until you hit the golf ball, which is only 2 seconds, you know, it's 1 second, and that's where I think the shorter shot routines are better. If you're sitting over the ball too long, you've lost your intent on what it is you originally asked your body to do. Because you're telling the body what to do. The subconscious is running everything. You got to give a lot of credibility to the subconscious. Subconscious is running everything in our physiological system right now, from heart rate to blood flow to everything. We don't even know what's going on. The body and the brain work the same way. Ask for what it is you want. and then you keep your attention and you'll execute some good shots. Let's say that doesn't work, you hit the bad shot, now your post shot routine, and stick with it, do it again. And if you get to four or five holes and you're having a bad round, just be careful that you're not, don't be reactionary, take back control, and that's a skill and that just takes practice.
Very cool. That helps
you did it in bowling, I'm sure. I'm sure you got some relating some of it to bowling. I'm sure that you have.
Oh, very much. And I have to say, intention versus attention is the first time I've ever heard that, and that's the coolest saying ever. Like, that totally registers with me. So if I got anything out of this call, it was that. That's a great saying.
That's great. Awesome. Well, okay, so we have what's called the back nine. It's nine just fun, random questions. This is more you than it is Think Golf. I can't believe that happened. I told you it was going to go fast. We've already been talking for 31 minutes. But first off, Jason, thank you for joining. I know that you were running late today. Scott, thanks for coming in from the bullpen. But Tim, are you ready for your back nine?
Yeah, fire away.
All right, who wins the President's Cup?
We do. Who's we?
Team International made it a little, I mean,
Stop.
What's your favorite restaurant in the Valley?
Mastro's.
Ooh, that's a funny story.
City Hall, Mastro's.
Ooh, City Hall, okay. I had a lady from Mastro's add me on LinkedIn yesterday, and we started talking, so good timing. So what is your favorite golf course? And if you say a Troon course, that's okay.
Favorite golf course? I'm from the Midwest, so I actually prefer trees, believe it or not. but I would have to, I played Cypress, and that was quite an experience, so it's kind of, when you think of a favorite golf course, you always think about an experience, so I'd have to say Cypress.
That cannot be a bad experience. We were talking about handicaps earlier. What's yours?
Oh boy, can we skip that one?
No.
Scott's not going to let you.
There's no skip on the back nine. He's got to go.
I passed my PAT 20 years ago. My staff's always like, you got to play more golf. If I went out today, boy, I'm on camera in front of a lot of people. If I went out today and I played True North from the tips, I'd be happy if I shot 80. If I broke 80.
From the tips, though. So.
Yeah. If I broke 80, I would be happy. But, yeah, the competitive golf days are over.
They're over.
My mental game's better, but my physical game is lacking because, I do not play a lot of golf, unfortunately.
Well, let's try to figure out how we can fix that. Yeah. What golf ball, when you do play, what golf ball do you play?
I usually play Pro V1 X. Yeah.
Who's your favorite LPGA Tour player? We don't talk about the LPGA enough.
I've worked with a couple of LPGA Tour players. That's a good question. I should probably mention them. I was at ASU, and I had about four or five of our girls are on the LPGA Tour. So I worked with Anna Norquist for years, Azahar Munoz. So those are my favorites, the Sun Devil LPGA girls.
My boss, Chris Strauss, will appreciate the Sun Devil shout-out, I am sure.
Quick note about Alzahara. She gave a golf ball to my son, Jace, when they were here in Dallas. She walked up and gave him a golf ball, and he was, like, on cloud nine for that. So
that's cool. So before we went live, we were talking about craft beer, and you said that you didn't know that I was into craft beer. So two-part question. Are you into craft beer yourself? And if so, who's your favorite local brewing company?
Local brewing company... Four Peaks that's a pretty good beer. That's a pretty good beer. But I usually am a Fat Tire Blue Moon guy, which I know is our different opposite spectrums, but those are two good beers.
So Les is going to get mad at me, but he's not here to yell at me, and he's going to tell me to stop asking this question every time I ask it, but I'm not going to.
Stop asking this question every time.
You can stop asking this question.
Thanks, guys. Do you think Tiger breaks the record? Why or why not?
Sorry, Tiger. I'm not so sure that's going to happen. Why not? Coming from the biomechanics background that I spent a lot of years in, I think injuries. I think those are hard to overcome. But mentally, I believe that you can overcome them. But I think that's a big hurdle to overcome. And the talent out there is getting pretty strong. I think we all saw that this year.
See, Jason, whenever he gives like an actual legitimate and like just like no and just moves on to the next question, so I'm going to allow that. I don't like it, but I'm going to allow it.
Yeah, you're coming to the acceptance, Ricky. It's okay.
And I'm to the point now when I ask the really question, is. I already assume I know the answer is going
to
be no.
Definitely coming to the acceptance.
Yeah, it's the first step to recovery.
I don't want to talk about it anymore. And the final question of your Friday foursome is, what is next for Think Golf?
The company's actually Think Sports. So what is next for Let's? Well, you did ask Think Golf, so let's talk about We're
no, but you can talk about Think Sports because I don't know if I realized.
Those are the same. So we're gonna do Think Bowling January
1. That would be awesome if that was January 1 rollout.
Performance is performance. So those same skills apply to any sport. I think
they do.
I was talking about. We're going to build a video library, so some of the things that we were talking about, we want to actually shoot videos of. So a shot routine, breathing techniques, maybe different technologies, and Dr. Debbie Cruz's company, which is Opti International, has come out with a device that you can actually train that does feedback. It's a feedback system. It's neural feedback. So the vertical, we're going to go from cognitive training with games to actually where you're going to put a device on, and it's going to communicate with your app, and you're actually going to train with this device. And this technology is out there, but it's mainly used. There's a company out of Toronto that's used for meditation, but we're doing it for feedback for athletes.
That is really cool. Well, hey, I can't thank you enough. We could have sat here and talked all day for coming on and doing this. It's fun. I'm going to make sure this gets posted in the golf community. It'll be on iTunes later so people can listen to it at home so you don't have to watch us talk back and forth. But Tim, thank you so much for doing this. Jason, get back to work. Scott, go have your afternoon break and enjoy your beer. And I know that this app is going to do, and he's not watching because I texted him before we started, his parents are in town, but I know that this app is going to do what Matt Rust always likes to say, and that's make less bogeys.